Welcome to Campaign Conversations with Rajon Lewis. Rajon Lewis is a husband, a father, a veteran, and a community leader. He is running for South Carolina House of Representatives in District 97. Join Rajon on the campaign trail. Rajon believes in the power of us. He believes that the people of District 97 need a champion who is willing to listen to the concerns of the people and not assume that he has all the answers. Join Team Rajon today. Follow on all social media platforms at Rajon for SC. Email the campaign today, rajonlewis4sc@gmail.com. Go to our website, rajon4sc.com, and make a contribution today. We hope you enjoy the episodes of this podcast and follow us along the campaign trail. Thank you for listening. On this week's episode of Campaign Conversations with Rajon Lewis, Rajon is joined by South Carolina House Representative and U.S. Senate candidate Crystal Matthews. Rajon and Representative Matthews talk about what it means to run for office right now and what it means to have the state government and federal government working together. They also dive deep into current legislation proposed by South Carolina Republicans to include banning CRT in schools and refusing to pass the Clementa C. Pinckney Hate Crimes Act. Representative Matthews also shares about current legislation she is proposing at the State House. Please join us on this episode and share with your friends. Also, check out Representative Matthews' website, matthewsforsenate.com, and check out Rajon Lewis's website, rajonforsc.com. We hope you enjoy. Thank you.
I am live. Everybody, how you doing? Thank you so much for joining us. I'm actually going to do something a little different. There she goes. I see you back. You got your hat on. Okay. Sorry, we're going to be professional. Representative Crystal Matthews. All right, be professional. All right. Thank y'all so much for joining us. We're going to take just a few minutes just to let you guys get in here. Go ahead and share this video out. This is our weekly campaign conversation address, and we are going to be live with Representative Crystal Matthews, District 117 representative, and current candidate for South Carolina, U.S. Congress. I'm running for the Senate to replace Senator Tim Scott. And we're going to talk about that tonight as well. We're going to get some updates on our current campaign. We got a lot of things that we're going to do. I wanted to go ahead and just, I'm going to do a brief live on my page just to let people know that we are live. Join me on my page. Sorry. I do talk while I type. I apologize. This week's campaign conversation with Crystal Matthews. Boom. All right. Oh, like I said, we're going to wait just a couple minutes just to give people an opportunity to get in here. Thank you all so much. My people, I just wanted to come in here on my, also on my personal page, just giving people an opportunity to come into the page. We will be live. I'm on my Rajon Lewis for SC page. That's where I broadcast my my Facebook lives, as well as on my YouTube page, on Twitter as well. So I will not be live on my personal page. I'll be live on my campaign page. So if you are watching here, please go to my campaign page so that you can watch it. Also, I need you on my campaign page because you need to be following my campaign page so you know what's going on. But I'm going to be getting started with Representative Crystal Matthews. We're going to be talking about a lot of things. We're talking about anti-CRT legislation. We're talking about the hate crime bill. We're going to talk about running for camp fair elections, what that looks like, and you know how that can be, how that the problems that come with it and the good things that come with it, and everything that goes with it. And we're taking your questions as well. So come in, bring your questions, bring your thoughts, bring your insights. But we will be live in about a minute and a half. So join us. See y'all then. Peace. All right. Let's go ahead and get right to it. Hello, and we are back. Thank y'all so much for joining me this week. First of all, I want to start by saying happy Black History Month. This is definitely a month that we choose to celebrate, that we use to celebrate the accomplishments of African Americans in this country and beyond. I'm one who believes in, you know, Black 365. Let's celebrate Black History 365. But thanks to Carter G. Woodson, who came up with this great idea to have this month, realizing that the accomplishments of African Americans were being overlooked and underappreciated throughout the year, he wanted to at least carve out this month for us to be able to specify that, you know, that this is a point of focus. So make sure that you look up some kind of important special Black history fact for today. I've been starting my mornings with Tamika Gadsden, who in and of herself is Black history in and of herself. She actually been having a series of discussions with people about Black history. She had a great discussion this morning. I can't remember the young lady's name, but she was an amazing speaker. And then yesterday she interviewed her father. But if you don't have any place to go to for your Black history information, go to Tamika Gaston's Mic'd Up on Twitch every morning at 8 a.m. All right. With that being said, I gave you guys a few minutes to get started in the conversation. We do have a special guest tonight. So make sure you share this with your friends and family. We are live on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. All right. So welcome to Campaign Conversations. And we have a lot to talk about tonight. I want to start off with just sharing some updates for this week's campaign this week. Today is February 3rd. That means we are 103 days from taking back District 97. We are 103 days from taking back District 97. Who are we taking it back from? Whoever's got it. And actually right now, that's nobody, because it's a vacant seat, which is why it's important that you guys get out and vote on May 17th. It's a special election day, so I'm going to have to drill it in your head. We are off to a great start, but I need your help. I need you to sign up to volunteer. We need your contributions, and we need you to share our social media pages. We need whatever amount of help that you can offer. I want to pause right there and just say it's very important that you all donate. Why is it important that you donate? Because campaigns need resources in order to thrive and win. The difference between a lot of campaigns winning and losing is the amount of financial resources that come into the campaign. So you don't have to give me, you don't have to max out at $1,000 for this campaign. If you can give me $10 a month, I greatly appreciate it. All you got to do is go to my website, www.rayjean4sc.com. That's www.rayjean4sc.com. And you can go there and pull up. Sorry, there you go. And make a donation there today. You can also go to my ActBlue, which is secure.actblue.com /donate/ Rayjean for SC. If you go to my website, you can also sign up to volunteer. We're starting with our phone banking. We started with our phone banking shifts, and we're dropping links for everything in the chat. So for the Twitter live stream, we'll post the links in a comment section so you guys have access to that. We need to reach 5,500 voters in the month of February through phone banking. And we can't do it alone. So please, if you have the time, and it only takes an hour or so a day, that you, and really you can choose the shifts that you want to help. But go to our website and sign up to phone bank. We have 2-hour shifts and we're holding phone banking training to make sure that you feel comfortable with doing it. We also have some training videos that we're putting together. Shout out to Sam Grant and the JGS team. They're doing a great job with it. I would not be me if I did not shout out my campaign team. Thank you to Jenny Atchley and the entire JGS Just Getting Started Strategies campaign team. They are doing a great job with so many campaigns across the Lowcountry. Watch out for that name. If you don't know the name Jenny Atchley yet, you will soon. You will soon. Also, you can sign up with the link dropped in the chat. So you can sign up under our website, on our website under events. Sorry, I'm reading a little bit. New script, I'm learning. All right. So we do have some events planned for the month of February. We wanted to wait until the weather picked up so we could do some things outdoors due to COVID. I just have gotten over COVID myself. I had it recently. Thankfully, my house is now over it and we're on the recuperating. We've all recuperated. We're all back to normal. Except probably my voice. Everything else is probably back to what it normally would be. Sorry, but we did want to make sure that things were a little more back to normal so we could go outside, as well as the fact that, you know, the weather's been kind of crazy. So we're planning to do some great events in the Colleton County Democratic Party, as well as the Dorchester County Democratic Party. So shout out to them for helping us out and doing amazing things in their counties. Specifically, on February 26th, I will be at the Blue Bash in Colleton County, which is going to be in Walterboro. So if you're going to be at the Blue Bash in Colleton County, meet me there. I'd love to see you and meet you and shake your hand or kiss your baby. But I'm not going to kiss your baby because it's COVID, and that would be unsafe. So, boom. All right. But that being said, let's move on to our guest speaker for this evening. Tonight, I have a special guest. She is the South Carolina House Representative for District 117 and a candidate for the U.S. Senate, Ms. Crystal Matthews. Some of you may know her as One Tough Mother, but I know her as a friend, a sister, and a comrade. And I want you guys to help me welcome soon-to-be Senator Crystal Matthews to Campaign Conversations.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Hey, how you doing, Representative Crystal Matthews?
I'm well. How are you?
All right. Now, for the purpose of the conversation, it is okay if I call you Crystal just because we're having a dialogue.
That is perfectly fine.
All right. Thank you so much. Please introduce yourself to those who may not know who you are.
So for those who don't know me, I am State Representative Crystal Matthews. I currently represent District 117 in the State House, which is Goose Creek, Latin, and a small piece of North Charleston.
All right.
You want me to say more or you want me to say?
Yeah, keep going. You got it.
Okay. I'm a single mother of 5, engineering planner by profession. I am originally from the great state of Ohio. I've been down here. I've been down here about 14 years now and loving this 80 degree weather today, by the way. Almost 80 anyway. So I am super excited. I am representing working families, young adults, minorities, women. And I'm really in this thing because I feel like we need some change.
Yeah.
So I'm excited. Let's talk.
Let's talk. So you know how we do. So I'm really excited about the opportunity to speak to you. For those who don't know, in addition to being pretty, I'd say pretty close to Crystal, I'm also someone who's really followed her political career from its inception. I actually was the person that let her know that she won when she won the first election. And I've been really, you know, honored to be able to watch her grow in this process of being a candidate. So can you talk about, you know, what made you want to run in the first place? What got you into running?
So the first year when I ran, 2017 was when we had to register. I actually was sitting in my bed reading an article on my phone. It was about midterm elections and why they're important. And it blew my mind that I did not understand the connection between politics and what laws are made and how I live my everyday life. So for me, I was blown away that I think I'm pretty like smart, like intelligent, like, oh man, you know, I understand things. I did not know. I mean, I know we know somebody made a lot of, we have to wear a seatbelt. I just didn't realize it was people that I live with, like my neighbors that run for office. And so it blew my mind. I fell asleep. I woke up the next morning and called my best friend. I said, I'm going to run for this seat. And she was like, yes. And I was like, wait, you don't have any more questions? Like nothing? Y'all, I didn't know anybody in the Democratic Party. I didn't nobody know anybody in the Republican Party. I didn't know anybody in any party. But I did know that I wanted to see change. And so I decided to put my name on the ballot, and the rest has been history.
Wow. Wow. And
I,
so
what and I raised $720, break the bank, and I still won, even though my
Say that again. You only $720,
y'all. And my opponent had 8 years worth of signage, 8 years worth of people, 8 years worth of everything. But guess what? People decided they wanted something different. Mm-hmm. And that is what you have to run on. You have to run on what you know you stand for, and you can't worry about who's running against you.
Yeah. And that's, you know, and that's something, you know, that passion, you know, that passion, and realizing that we all have a role to play, and that especially, you know, I've spoken in previous campaign conversations about the fact that, you know, growing up where I grew up, it didn't seem like something that was tangible. It seemed like that was something that other people did, like other people ran for office. It didn't seem like something that I could do. But you running and you winning showed me the possibilities. So I always give you the props for being the person that's really my trailblazer. We talk about Black History Month. Wow. To me, you're Black History. You know, you're the first woman, Black woman to win that.
I am officially Black History. I am literally Black History here in South Carolina. I am the first woman, the first Black woman to win my seat. I'm also the first woman and first Black woman to ever be vice of the Charleston delegation. I am the first. I actually am Black History. I'm the first person in the history of the Boeing Company to ever work and serve at the same time. I am officially Black History.
You're absolutely Black History. And so those are the kind of things that when I decided to jump off the porch, when, you know, again, full disclosure, when you sent me the text and said, hey, it's time for you to run, like she resigned, it was like, okay, it's time to go. You put that battery pack in my back. And I had to look back, you know, at my history and the things that I've been through, you know, as a veteran, as a teacher, you know, in the classrooms, the things that we experienced that we didn't realize, that we had an ability to make a direct impact on, and to really throw my hat in the ring and realize that I had what it took to be successful in this thing. So thank you again so much. Thank you again so much for that. So now you're running for U.S. Senate. What's the difference there? What's that shift that your mind had to make in making that and doing that?
So running for the U.S. Senate is a much larger race than my state house race. U.S. Senate is statewide. So I don't have just like right now, my district is 44,000 people, but now it becomes much larger because it is all 46 counties. So I have a lot more territory to cover, a lot more people that I have to get my name out to. And also it's a lot on my body and my mind, right? So when we talk about the wear and tear, I mean, I'm a mother of five, so I got to still go to track meets and basketball games and buy Gatorade and do all that stuff. I got to cook dinner, but I'm also serving as well in the state house. So I still have to go to session. I still have to vote. I still have to hear my constituents and make sure that their needs are met while I'm also campaigning and doing over 200 calls a day, things like that in between, making calls while I'm on the run to raise money so that I can get my message out. It is a very strenuous pace that you have to keep up to run a statewide race.
Agreed. And can you talk about even like some people may think that all elections are the same. Can you talk about the differences fundraising wise, that because I know you mentioned, you know, when you ran for state house, you were able to do that on raising $750. What is the difference in the Senate race that sort of ratchets
so
that up?
One of the main differences is that your filing fee when you run for the state house is $208. Unless they've changed it, it was $208. And when you file to run for the U.S. Senate, it's $10,004. So a little over $10,000. So you have to raise a substantial amount of money when you talk about running for a statewide race, even to even get your name on the ballot. You have to hit $10,000 just to get your name on the ballot. And then you talk about digital ads, you talk about radio, you talk about TV, you talk about travel time and expenses. You talk about your team, people that are working for you. All of those things really come into play when we talk about fundraising and being able to keep up the pace.
Yeah, yeah. And I wanted to make sure we showed that difference, like that we showed that difference, because some people may ask themselves, like, all right, they're always asking for money. You sound like pastors. Why you got to ask for money all the time? If you're just trying to run to represent the people, then you should just run. And, you know, it's just not about money. And the truth is, a lot of it has to do with money. Everything that you just mentioned, I mean, just to come back to my campaign, you know, when I filed to run, I had to pay a fee to file to run. Mm-hmm. I had to pay a fee to the state. And then there's certain things that I have to pay in terms of campaign team, signage, everything that you mentioned before. So it's so important that, you know, at the end of this campaign conversation, when we start talking about, you know, going to this site, I'm going to go ahead and put Crystal's site up, going to the site and making a donation to the campaign. Go, if you support Crystal, if you support the thing that Crystal stands for, please go to her site and make a donation. Don't just support her with your words. Support her with your money, because people on the other side, they're not just tweeting. We love your retweets. We appreciate your retweets. Yeah. I think I had 37 retweets today. If I had 37 donations today, that could be the difference between me winning and losing. So when you retweet, if you can just send me $5 while you're retweeting, when you're retweeting Crystal's, her TikToks, when you're sending her TikToks out and you're sharing her campaign stuff, send her $5, send her $10 when you do that. Do it because you believe in what she's doing. All right. When you're supporting these campaigns, especially when you're talking about, and I want to come back to you on this point, Crystal, we talk about campaign corruption. Oh, you can't trust politicians. You can't trust politicians. Politicians are all bought off. Well, guess what? The people that are supporting these politicians that are allowing them to win these elections, can I have water? That are allowing them to win these elections are giving them money so that they can buy signage.
Now, let me jump in. So you can get a sip of water while I jump in on that point. So one of the things that I find on this side of the aisle is that people always want good people to run, right? They're like, we need some good candidates. We need some good people who understand. But then they want to have support. You know, it's like, oh, well, I'll just give a little bit, or I'll just give, you know, Republicans are all in. Like, I know that was our theme from when Jamie Harrison ran, but y'all, we ain't all in. They're all in. Now, we were all in for Jamie Harrison, but we got to be all in for every race. That is how they're beating us to the punch every single time. You know why? They're not all in for one race. They're all in for all the races, even the small ones. So what they do is they get all the little ones and then they cut our feet from underneath us. And we're not paying attention. Why? We're waiting on that one great candidate. We're waiting on the white great hope. And, you know, of course, that's not literal like white, but I think that's off of a movie or something. So, you know, like Democrats have to understand, especially minorities, like, get in the habit of being in roles and on lists, because it'll keep you informed on what's going on. It will keep you sign up for these email chains. I know there's a lot of them. Oh my God, there's so many. I get like a million myself. But figure out how to organize them in folders. Take a Google class on how to do it if you don't know how, because sometimes you miss very valuable information when things are going on and when candidates are running that you really need to pay attention to. And so to speak to the corruption that you were talking about, I mean, of course, I mean, if you are in a certain profession where you want people to vote in your favor, you throw money behind candidates that you think will vote in your favor. And so what happens with us is we'll say, well, this person is corrupt and this person, but we're not giving them a reason to not be corrupt. And I hate to put the onus on us, but it is really on us, because if we supported our candidates and they knew they could survive independent of that crap, I don't necessarily think some of them would do it just because they raggedy. But then I think there's a large sector that would not, because they knew they had the support that they were going to need to hold them up. And so, you know, most of the people in the state house are lawyers or independently wealthy or retired, right? So it keeps real people from running, which excites me about my legislation, by the way, if I might do a shameless plug. I'm going to be filing legislation to give us what I'm calling legislative leave, like your leave of absence from your job. You can take parental leave of absence. If you have a baby, you get pregnancy leave. And I'm thinking legislative leave needs to be one of our options so that you can hold your job while you're serving in office. If you can't, you know, if you don't have a job that gives you the flexibility to go back and forth, but also if you make under a certain threshold that gives you a stipend, that way you can survive if you're a working family or a working person that wants to run. One of the things I'm hell bent on is making it more tangible for people like me. It would make no sense for me to be there if I wasn't trying to make it more tangible for people like me. So that is what I'm fighting for. So when you get candidates like me, when you get candidates like Rajon, you know, you have to go 10 toes down, and you got to tell other people to go 10 toes down. You can't sit by and hope somebody does it. I hope they never won anything. Just so y'all know, folks sell hope all the time, but it ain't never won anything.
And it comes back to the fact that, you know, even the small amount, even the smallest donations still make a difference. Like I remember the Barack Obama campaign. One of the big things about it was that the people came out and supported Barack Obama. And they not only just supported in terms of words, like they went out and donated, and people were making like $5, $10 donations, but it adds up. You know, I say every week that if we get 100 people to give $10, get 100 people to give $10, that can go a long way on a campaign.
$1,000. I'm sorry, you said $10.
Right. That's $1,000. We get 100 people to give $10. Like, that goes a long way. So we might be small. We might say, you know, my little donation don't matter. Not Monty, I see that you donated. Thank you, my guy. I appreciate you so much, so much, so much. But we got to support with more than just our words. We got to support with our dollars. If we want to see candidates that are going to fight for you and not fight for corporate interests, and fight for you and not fight for the highest bidder, then we got to make sure that we're backing these people who are running, like myself, like Crystal, Representative Matthews, who are fighting for you. I love the fact, I just want to talk a little bit about that legislation that you just brought up. I think that's a great idea, because one of the things that keeps people from wanting to run is, well, I can't leave my job and do this. Like, I can't do my job and run for office. So having legislation like that in place, that's one of those things where you actually are reaching back to that next generation to give them the tools they need. So when Monty decides to run, Monty doesn't have to say, may I have to choose my job or to serve my country or serve my state. So I love that. Thank you so much for that. I want to talk about one more thing before we go into the topics for this week. Many people don't understand how the South Carolina government and the federal government work together to create legislation and to how it runs. So can you speak about how your ascension to the federal level will help us here in the state of South Carolina, when you beat Senator Scott for that?
So one of the things that we don't have right now is we don't have cohesiveness. A lot of what goes on is going on in a silo. So I don't care how much they tell you they're together and all that. Lindsey Graham and Tim Scott are not talking to Republicans here unless they need something from them. And so what I will do when I get elected is create a communication chain that works, right? Municipalities are at the bottom of my cake. I do a three-tier government cake. It's three layers. You pick whatever flavor you want. The bottom is the municipalities. That's the foundation of the cake. And why is that the foundation? Because that's where we are. That's where the people are. That's your mayor, your city council, your school boards. Those are the people closest to us that touch us, that can tangibly touch us. And then they need resources, right? All the resources that they need, they can't get from where they are. So that's where you go to the middle layer of the cake is the state. That's where I'm at right now with the state house, your senators and your house rep and your governor. We get resources in from the federal government, which is your top tier. That is Congress, the U.S. Senate, and your president, right? So that money filters down into the state, which filters down into municipalities. So when there's a common need, that change should flow freely. But right now, it does not. And everybody is working in silos. So that is how the three layers of government work together. And when you talk about passing bills, that pressure goes up and down. It flows in both directions. That pipe, if you will, is like a water pipe. It'll flow in both directions. So, for example, the abortion ban. Right now, in the middle of the cake is the state, right? That is, they are passing abortion bans, but they can't really do anything because the top layer of the cake has not overturned that, right? But they are doing that to apply pressure upward so that they will change it.
Yeah.
Now, in the same breath, right, they passed, like they passed the American Rescue Plan, right, that had money in it for states. Now, Republicans were anti that plan. None of them voted for it, right? They were like, we don't want it, we don't want it. But it was up here, it got passed, it applies pressure this way, it's going down. So they're saying, you got to use this money for this, you got to use this money for this. So sometimes when laws appear passed, it applies pressure down. And sometimes when they want to apply pressure going backwards, going up, they will pass legislation, even though legally it doesn't bind it. What it does is it calls attention to it. It's like saying, hey, we want this. And so that's how the layers of cake all work together. And the municipalities are where we are. And we want to make sure we can get as many resources as we can down to this the bottom layer. Because if your foundation ain't good, your cake is going to fall apart. And everybody knows when your grandmama was baking a cake, you could not open the oven. You know why? Because when you open the oven, you let the heat out and it makes the cake bake unevenly. So the cake would bake unevenly. So if you like my grandmama, when she baked the cake, you couldn't open the oven because the heat would fluctuate. And so your cake would be baked uneven. And then when you take it out and sit it on the stove, a lot of y'all would notice, but it would fall. Right? The cake would fall because it had baked unevenly. Y'all, we have a falling cake in South Carolina right now. We are economically sound, but our cake has fallen in education. Our cake has fallen in healthcare. Our cake has fallen in infrastructure, all because we didn't bake it evenly. We didn't set the foundation. So our cake is falling apart. So anyway, go ahead.
Hey, listen, I will not stop a runaway train. I will never try to stop a runaway train.
Well, thank you so much for the explanation. People understand how the three layers work together.
No, that makes complete sense. And thank you for saying that. And thank you for the metaphor of the cake, because that provides great context. It provides great context. So let's talk about some of these what's going on in legislation, some things that's going on, especially with it being Black History Month. It's interesting that they're trying to push these bills through this month. But okay, I think messaging is important, and I think that some people are trying to send a message with what they're doing. And so let's talk about this anti-CRT legislation that they're working on now. So if you just in case you don't know, because I'm not going to assume that everybody has the same level of knowledge when it comes to this stuff. CRT is critical race theory, right? Critical race theory is something that they are trying to stop. It's a buzzword that people have decided to use as what I like to call the boogie monster, the boogeyman, or the Loch Ness monster, Bigfoot. One of these apparitions that they've decided to boost up to make people scared. And what they're scared of is really interesting, but I won't get into that right now. We'll get into that in the midst of the discussion. But there is currently legislation in the State House to ban critical race theory. And I just want to read to you all what it says. All right. So the bill that they're proposing, there are five different bills that are in the state Senate right now on a critical race theory. All right. It says critical race theory instruction prohibition, so as to provide public school districts, public schools, and public institutions of higher learning may not direct or otherwise compel students to personally affirm, adopt, or adhere to the tenets of critical race theory or provide related instruction and to define necessary terminology. So They're creating a bill to stop critical race theory. Now, before we even get into any discussion about this, I want to be very clear about one thing. Critical race theory is not taught in any school in America. Not one. There is not one school that you can go to and find critical race theory as it pertains to the 1619 Project, which most people use as their litmus test for critical race theory ideas. All right. So let's go to the details of the bill. It says public schools, school districts, and public institutions of higher learning may not direct. Oh, are you separating it? I'm just trying to critical race. All right, cool. For the purposes of this chapter, critical race theory means any of the following tenets. One, any sex, race, ethnicity, religion, color, or national origin is inherently superior or inferior. Now, I was a teacher. I can tell you that nothing that I've ever seen specifically taught that anybody was inherently superior or inferior. Nothing I've ever seen in any supporting document as a teacher, as an educator, somebody who has to study the supporting document to teach it, never seen it. Two, individuals should be adversely treated on the basis of race, sex, ethnicity, religion, color, or national origin. Again, nothing I've ever taught or seen that needs to be taught says that anybody should be treated adversely based on their sex, race, ethnicity, religion, color, or national origin. Three, individuals by virtue of sex, race, ethnicity, religion, color, or national origin are inherently responsible for the actions committed in the past by other members of the same sex, race, ethnicity, religion, color, or national origin. Now, that's where we got to pause. That's where we got to have the conversation. Because again, this is them saying that they should not be able to be made to feel bad about things that happened in the past. They are creating a bill that will say that anything that makes somebody feel bad about somebody, something that somebody did in the past, we have to remove from legislation. Is that your understanding, Representative Matthews?
It is, and I can't wait to take out Christopher Columbus. So there's that. He did not discover America, and his ass is coming out. I just can't wait to get rid of him.
Sorry, I
hate to be petty, but you can't legislate somebody's feelings.
You can't.
I mean, you know, it's funny that the party that talks about personal freedom wants to raise our kids. Well, come get these little motherfuckers. Come get them then. If you want to raise them, come get them. I mean, don't have come get them. All the way come get them. Feed them, clothe them, all of that. Because we're now to the point where you want to raise our children by telling us basically what they can. How do you legislate how somebody feels? I mean, y'all teaching that Christopher Columbus discovered America. So how that make the Indian kids feel? How they feel when y'all say that and they know good and well that's a lie?
Yeah.
Can't wait. I can't wait to go back and forth about this bill in the state house about how people feel. Some of y'all should be butthurt because some of y'all still acting like that. Mm. Some of y'all still carry the tenets of where you came from. I'm sorry. I don't get to change your raggedy heritage. It ain't my fault your ancestors were thieves. I didn't do it. So you mad at me? So you're making me feel bad now. Mm.
So I want to come back to the fact that, one, this legislation that's being pushed through is ridiculous.
It is.
It's ridiculous.
You know, this is a campaign ploy. And then, and then on top of that, they've manufactured a definition for CRT that is actually not the definition. So the and this is what I keep saying. People keep saying, you know, it's the Republican Party. But at the same time, and I said this, I think last week during session is it then if you sit back and watch something that you know is wrong continue without saying anything and you become a part of it, it is now no longer about your party, but it becomes about the individual. Because my individual integrity is not going to let me sit around and watch something I know is is wrong and agree with it. So the fact that when this comes to the floor, the votes will tell us a lot about the integrity of the people that we have serving in the South Carolina State House as to how this bill goes. And that will just tell you a couple of things that you might already know. You know, people are so, they got a hard on for being called a rep. You know, they're so hard up for attention and title that they won't do what's right, even in the face of wrong. I mean, that just speaks to their integrity level. The fact that we're wasting precious time. We already have a part-time session from January through May. We don't have a lot of time to get things done, and we don't utilize our time properly. And now we're sucking up more of that time with legislating something that currently does not even exist, nor something that is legislatable, because you can't legislate somebody's feelings. You can't predict how somebody is going to respond to hearing information. And so this really has no basis, and it makes no sense at all. But here we are spending all our time and effort and energy on things that are less, that are not important at all. I agree. Less important, but it's you know, Rajon, it's not important. I mean, it's just not. We have all these other educational issues to deal with.
Yes.
And here we are dealing with CRP.
So a couple things. One, let's talk about the merits of this idea, right? Because nobody had an issue since the idea of social studies, which the idea of social studies is literally like U.S. history. The idea of teaching that in schools is roughly 100 years old. It was created in like right around between like 1910 and 1920 by a man by the name of Henry Dewey. Dewey decimal system, a lot of that came from him, right? So that idea is roughly 100 years old, right? Nobody has had a problem that for 100 years, African Americans were told that your people came to this country and were enslaved people. You were beaten, you were whipped, you were subjugated, and there was nothing you could do about it. And that was taught in schools. What do you think that makes a young African American child feel like when that's what they're taught about their people?
And the only thing they're taught about their people. Please don't don't forget that part. That's the only thing.
Yes. Yes. And not focusing on the people who did come over and make tremendous change. In fact, the fact that the reason that the Africans were chosen was because of the skills that they had developed in Africa, which were directly applicable. See, these are things that you could actually teach and would actually show that these people are not inferior. So when I get into a classroom and somebody decides to use certain racial epithets because in school they learned this about African Americans and they didn't learn about the great things of African American, are you teaching these people that all people are inferior, that are equal? Or are you teaching them inherently that some people are superior and some people are inferior just based on the definition that they have? Let's talk about the merits of this bill. Now, let's come off the merits of this bill, because part two, we should not be telling teachers what they need to be teaching.
Yeah, so that was my other concern, right? My concern is that teachers are, you know, this. You know, I have said this before and I will repeat it unabashed. If you are a teacher and you vote Republican, I have nothing for you. Don't take up my time. Don't take up my energy. Go talk to them. Because not only are they putting you in a position where you have to walk on eggshells about what you can or can't say because of a penalty that may be levied at you, right? Because of this. So, you know, Whoopi had a slip up on the air the other day, and other famous people have slipped up on the air and said things that were racist or anti-Semitic and all this, right? And we jump on them. You know, my question is that where we're going with our teachers now? Because if little Billy come home and say X, Y, and Z, and then his mama raised Cain, you know, what happens to that teacher? So we already can't keep teachers. And then we're now making them walk on eggshells. But Rajon, beyond that, we're also adding that they have to have an extra filter. So they got to be damn nurses. They got to be teachers. They got to be parents. They got to now be CRT filters. And, you know, like, it's mental health. I mean, damn. And we already underpaying them.
Yeah.
And we already underpaying them. And we adding something else to their stress level. But they ain't getting no hazard pay. They're not getting no extra money. And they still have families that they have to take the stress home to.
Yeah.
And we're not accounting for any of that. It's like, oh, teachers will be fine. Let's just add more to them.
Yeah.
They'll be fine. We'll just give them more. It's okay. Yeah. They can deal with it. Right? When they change things, they don't care. They don't care. And then you got all these teachers like, I'm a Republican. We don't care what your party affiliation is right now. We want you to vote based on what makes sense for your life.
Yeah.
When I was speaking with UCOR last week, one of the little Black girls asked me a question. She said, Micah is a Republican. Me and him do youth corps every year. We've done it for 4 years. We have a great time together. And one of the little Black girls asked me a question. She said, well, how did you become a Democrat? And I said, well, I was just raised under, you know, being a Democrat. And so that's a lot of the reason why I'm probably a Democrat. And Micah was probably raised Republican. That's probably a lot of the reason why he's Republican. But as we get older and we get our own mindset, and as we serve in this General Assembly, and I want anybody watching this to really take this to heart right now. Your party affiliation, it's just an umbrella. It's an umbrella. Nobody agrees with everything in their party. Nobody. I don't care if you Republican. I don't care if you're Democratic. It's an overarching umbrella. You have to have your individual mindset on how you think about each topic. You have to read it for yourself. You have to see what's in it and decide whether it makes sense. All of us played together when we were little. White kids, Black kids, Hispanic kids. I'm from a town that's 70% white. We all played together. But as we get older, those influences start to change how we see the world, the filter in which we see it through. But when it's time to legislate, you have to make sure that the filter you're seeing it through is the filter that you were elected to represent. And I say that because I personally might feel XYZ, but is there a compromise that I can get to that doesn't compromise my morals, but also where I'm doing what I know is right? That will, you know, like you have to get to that individual mindset. You can't keep staying under your umbrella because you will never agree with there is nobody you agree with in totality. Nobody. Right. If you're married, I don't care. You don't agree with your spouse in totality, and you done pledged yourself to them for life.
Yeah.
And there's times where you're gonna be like, babe, no, I don't want to invest in that. Well, babe, we can make a bunch of money. Well, I don't think it's a good idea. Well, I looked at the numbers and they say it's a good idea. It's like, well, nah, it's not a good idea. But y'all, we're talking about our children. We can't experiment with them and then roll it back when it go wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the difference.
I wanted to talk about that point, and then we'll move on to the next topic. But I wanted to talk about the fact you just mentioned, you know, this idea of like Republicans have to stick together and Democrats have to stick together. I think that we see a lot more working together across the aisle if there was more diversity at the state house level. And the truth is, right now, there is no benefit to a Republican to voting with Democrats. Because the people, right, we know that we have a Republican-controlled House, Senate, and governorship. We know that. They have all three key positions in our state. They have the majority on all three levels. So for a representative who is a Republican, even if he agrees with Democrats or she agrees with Democrats, it does them no good to go against their party because they have such a large majority, which comes back to you, the voter. The voter have to make sure that our legislative body reflects the people of the state of South Carolina. You have to make sure that your legislators represent you. So we can't look at it and say, it's a fixed fight. There's no way we can win this. No, we can win this. Republicans don't go into elections saying, oh, that's the one we can win. That's the one we can lose. So the ones we're going to lose. And the ones we're going to lose, we'll just completely ignore and we'll throw all our resources into the ones that we can win. No, they go after every single race. And as Democrats, we've got to go after every single race. Because once we start to even it up, they'll start to find the benefit in agreeing with us. There are some people who are riding that fence. There are some Republicans who want to work with Democrats. I believe that. But right now, especially in a time where we know what our former president is doing in terms of appointing his own candidates to run, we know what he's doing there. And he can do that because he has the support of his base. We have to shore up the support of our base. And the reason that an anti-CRT bill can be pushing through its way through the Senate, despite the fact that it's going after something that, again, is not evident anywhere in the country and yet has yet to be truly determined in terms of a definition, is because there's a majority Republican, a heavy majority Republican in Republican presence in the Senate. It's that simple. They can push it through without the Democrats, just like they just did the redistricting bill, just like they did with the House redistricting, without any Democratic support, without any Democratic input, because our legislative body does not represent the people of South Carolina. Sorry, Crystal, I had to make sure I said that one.
No, I mean, you're perfectly fine. I think that it comes down to two things, right? You want to vote for, I don't care what side of the aisle they're on, you want to vote for legislators who are going to teach you. I'm big on teaching everything I learned that happened at the State House. But another thing is, people tend to think that Republicans are strong. You know, it's the exact opposite. And I keep trying to get people to understand, stop looking at a coin on its head, flip it upside down. You know, they're scared. Most of the time, they're moving out of fear of their own party. You know, they're moving out of fear. If somebody throws up a notion and they don't want to be that person to go against it, it's not because they're strong. It's because they're weak. It's because their confidence is not where it needs to be to say, I don't care what y'all say. I'm not gonna vote for something that I know is stupid, right? They don't have that because when they get that rally and they can't handle all that pressure that comes. And our past has definitely built us for that pressure, right? So that's why we have more of that independent mindset. And that's why we seem so fragmented. It's not that we're necessarily fragmented. It's just because we all have we have strong minds and we're pressing for things that we know we need regardless. And they're folding to the pressure of what their base is saying they want. And so I think that has a lot to that. That brings a lot of what comes in the State House to light as far as what you see when you see the voting. And people will get with you on bills, but they just won't do it on controversial bills.
Right, which makes sense. So let's pivot right there. And thank you so much for that context for sure. There's another bill that's being held up on the Senate side. You guys have already gotten it through the State House, which is that hate crime legislation. In the state of South Carolina, we are one of two states that does not have a hate crime bill on the books. And we are working. You guys did a great job in the House of pushing it through the House, even without having that majority Democrats. So that means that some House Republicans, like you said, were willing to work with you guys to make sure that we push this legislation through. But now it's held up on the Senate side. So let's talk about what the Clementa C. Pinckney Hate Crime Bill Act requires, right? Because this is something that I made a statement about recently, and I know that the South Carolina State House Dems did a press conference led by Representative Wendell Gilliard, calling for the passing of the Hate Crime Act, the Clementa C. Pinckney Hate Crime Act, who was one of the beautiful souls that we lost I think it was June 17th, to the Emmanuel Nine murders at the hands of a white supremacist by the name of Dylann Roof. But this bill requires an enhanced penalty for specific crimes committed against a victim who was intentionally selected in whole or in part by an offender because of the offender's belief or perception regarding the victim's race, color, gender, national origin, sexual orientation, physical or mental disability, regardless of whether the offender's belief or perception is correct. Offenses to which the enhanced penalty may be applied include violent crimes, classes A through F of felonies, and classes A through C misdemeanors, and assault by mob in the second degree. Enhanced penalty will be added to the penalty for the underlying offense and will consist of an additional fine of not more than $10,000 and an additional term of imprisonment of up to 5 years. So that's an increased responsibility in terms of punishment for somebody who commits a hate crime.
Mm-hmm.
This is important. We cannot continue to live as a state. We know our history as a state. I just want to start right there. We know our history as a state. If you are a state that was a part of the Confederacy, you should be doing everything you can to clean up the dirt of the Confederacy. That's something that I feel. I'm sorry, that may not make me very popular with some people, but we got to clean that up. And one of the things that came out of the Confederacy and one of the things that the Confederacy was built on is this idea that we can target people and hurt people. What was the Ku Klux Klan built on? Hatred of a specific group of people. Hatred.
Yep.
So we needed to have bills. We should have had bills since the Jim Crow era that said, if you burn a church because it's a black church, that's a hate crime. And you need to face a more severe penalty. If you go and you commit a crime, you beat a boy because you think he whistled at a white woman because he's a black boy, that's a hate crime. That's not just a crime. That crime is driven by hate. You have to face a more severe penalty than somebody who just beat up a black boy or just beat up a boy just because he's a boy and like two people have a fight. It's not the same. A lynching, a hanging, an assault generated and created by hate is much more than just a happenstance situation. So
I
want you to talk about the work that you guys did because you did a great job of pushing it through. Can you talk about what that process was and why you're so passionate about this as well?
So the process was a few of our leaders definitely having some very important and heated conversations with the other side about, you know, let the wording and the structure of the bill. And it's important because we live in a society where there has to be a consequence for these things. The one thing that stood out to me the most during the debate, well, actually around the time we were pushing for the hate crimes bill, was there were Republicans who wanted to piecemeal other legislation about the same thing, but don't want to vote for the hate crimes bill. And I'm like, you know, y'all real good at this, right? They'll piecemeal everything. They won't expand Medicaid, right? But with the hate crimes bill, I think around the end of like last year sometime, I think people were graffitiing the Catholic churches or something. Or it was either Catholic churches or mosques. And, you know, it was brought, like, they were putting, like, photos on the screen of the graffiti and all this stuff. And I'm thinking, okay, so you want a bill saying that you can't do X, Y, and Z, but you could just pass the hate crimes bill, and that would already be a part of what gets covered, right? So this is what we deal with up there on a regular basis. And the Senate really does need to pass this hate crimes bill. I would have thought that when one of their own, somebody you sit with week after week, I would love to in my mind think that if something ever happened to me, if nobody else pushed for me, them folks that see me every single week would push for something to be done. That is one of the biggest disappointments of my time up there, is seeing people who claim to be Christian have so much hate in their heart that they can't separate themselves from the umbrella of a party long enough to do something that they know is right. I believe that overwhelmingly most of the citizens of this state know that it's time to pass this bill. I know that. I can feel it in my gut. And I've talked to so many people, not just Black folks, white folks. I've talked to so many people that asked me about this hate crimes bill because it is important to them. When the Asians were being attacked, everybody was on board. Why is it that the last people to get aid are always Black folks? Why is it that we have to keep going through this cycle before we can get a response? You know, our tears are just as valuable as anybody else's. The fact that we're not allowed to be victims, we're not allowed to be soft, we're not allowed to cry. You know, we are not brick walls. We are not brick and mortar. We feel. And I remember when all of this stuff was going on and friends reaching out and saying, you know, just checking on you. You know, I told my manager at the time, it's hard to keep watching your people die and not feel nothing. You've got to feel something. It's in us. It's the soul tie that binds us. And this hate crimes bill is something that I can't believe they would try to make it a Black bill. This bill, it covers all of us. It covers all of us. It covers the Catholics. It covers the Asians, the Jews, the Blacks, the Hispanics. It covers all of us, y'all. It don't just say protect Black people. But dang, one of their own, Rajan? One of their own. One of their own.
Yeah, and so that I'm glad you made that point, because this is a point that I want to make sure that's very clear. One, anti-hate crime legislation is not Black legislation.
It is not.
I think we've proven as a nation up until this point that we're not willing to pass bills that are specifically for Black people. So I'll take it out of the realm of it being a Black bill, because it's not a Black bill. But let's talk about another bill that people try to make to be about Black people.
Okay.
The Civil Rights Acts of 1965 and 1968. The Voting Rights Act of 1968.
Mm-hmm.
Those bills, those laws, did not just impact Black people. Though Black
Women.
People had to fight, Black Women. People had to fight for it, but everybody else benefited from those bills.
Women.
Women. White women.
Women. Yes. And white women. Because Black women can get to vote right away. You better
disabled
come on,
people. History.
You better come on, teacher.
Disabled people. The IDEA Act was a part of the Civil Rights Act.
Yes. Yes.
People, minorities of all backgrounds.
Yes.
Gays.
Yes.
Almost everybody benefited from the Civil Rights Act. Why? Because it's a human rights act. It's a human right. It says people, it holds us to our truest identity. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. All men and women are created equal. It holds us to our truest concepts as a country.
Yeah.
So every time that there's a law that comes up and says, let's treat everybody the same.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make sure there are protections for everyone. Mm-hmm. Somehow that becomes a Black bill.
But you know what? I blame some of that on the media. Messaging is very important. And I remember even with like food stamps and stuff, they always show Black families. There's more white folks on food stamps and government assistance than there are Black people. Just by racial proportion wise alone, welfare is held up by white folks. I mean, white folks are on it disproportionately more than Black people. But when they show the ads, they show us. And so messaging is very important when you talk about the Civil Rights Bill, things like that, voting rights, you know, the George Floyd Voting Act. As soon as they attached it to a Black face, people were like, I don't need it. I don't want it. Right.
Yeah.
But not understanding. Right. Even when that passed for the women with the voting rights, Black women were not even allowed to vote right away. We still had to fight on. And then the white women didn't want to fight with us because they was like, well, we got ours, so we good.
Mm, mm, mm.
I don't even like history like that, but somebody ought to teach them today. We can have a whole lesson in here today because I feel this thing in my shanana.
No, but I want to make sure that we talk about it because it's important. I want to make sure, like I'm someone who believes in working with everybody, and I know that you to be the same as well. You know, you do a lot of work in the State House, even in our private conversations. You always, you know, tell me, Rajan, when you get up here, make sure you understand that everybody is a potential ally. Everybody is a potential person that you can work with to get legislation passed that you're really passionate about. And if you come up here for the right reasons and you're doing it for the right reasons, you're going to have to work with some people that some people probably think that you shouldn't be working with. But if you can get the legislation passed that you need to push the things that you're passionate about and the issues that you want to see corrected, you have to do that. So that's important. But I also wanted to get some of these things out. I want to remove some of the boogeyman from some of these issues. I want to talk about what things actually are. And these bills are not black bills. But if you want to make it a black bill, let's talk about this really quickly. I want to share my screen. Hold on a second. Governor McMaster, on February 1st, 2022, retweeted this. His governor's proclamation about Black History Month. See, you can't tell me that you believe in honoring the accomplishments and contributions of African Americans and then do nothing to protect them. You can't. We can't allow this performative, these performative actions. I'm really glad that people decided to turn their avatars black when, you know, George Floyd died. But if you didn't push legislation to protect people from the actions that have harmed them, I don't believe you. You need more people.
But do you want to hear what? So let me just give y'all a peek behind the curtain. Whenever we're in the State House and something like that comes up, you know, the very conservative ones, you know, out here comments like they want to make everything a black and white issue. Why is everything a black and white issue? And, you know, they never ask us directly. But that's how they talk, right? And my question is always, yeah, why is it? No, like literally, why is it then? Like, yeah, no, I'm asking the same question with inference. Yeah, like, why is everything a black and white issue? I ain't making it one. Somebody's making it one. It ain't me. But when you talk about the realities of who's disparaged, they're not good at reality. That part they struggle with. And so it's going to take filtering out some of that old mentality to really create some reform and change.
Yeah.
Because all Republicans don't believe that. And they know that.
Agreed.
And so you have to filter out that old mentality in order to really get to a place where we can make progress.
Thank you so much for that. I really appreciate it. We were running a little bit over time tonight, but I really wanted to make sure that we talked about the anti-CRT bill, which is currently in legislation, as well as this hate crime bill, which also in currently legislation. So if you came on here tonight and you were hoping to hear, you know, about what's currently going on in the State House, you heard about it. If you wanted to find out, you know, why Representative Matthews has decided to put her hat in the ring for the U.S. Congress as the next senator from the state of South Carolina. I believe you've heard that. And I believe if you were wondering some of the platform issues that I care about and where I stand on some of these issues that are going on, I believe you've heard that. But I want to just close on this thought. And I guess, well, Crystal, I'll let you give your closing thoughts and I'll give my closing thoughts.
Okay. I just wanted to add a few things. So being white during Black History Month, I want white folks to be comfortable being white. I don't want white people to be black. I want black people to be comfortable being black. And it's okay. It's perfectly normal to be comfortable with the environment that you grew up around. There's nothing wrong with that. But when you want to learn something about another culture, apply yourself to go and learn it. Don't always wait or expect somebody from that culture to teach you. But if you do have the benefit of having a friend or a neighbor or even a coworker that you feel like you can have that conversation with, that can take you to some events that are happening during this month, or that can introduce you to some of the differences or the perspectives, take that opportunity to expand yourself. And that's reality, right? Because I hear Black folks complain all the time about white folks being white. I'm like, y'all, they white. I mean, they grew up white. I don't expect them to be anything but white. I love my white friends that are white. My white friends that are white are gangsters. They will shoot you before you can say amen. I'm good with it. Like, love them to death. Promise.
They will not shoot you. Her friends
will
not shoot
you. My white friends will put you to rest forever. So, period. They're gonna, you know, they're the ones that's going to let you talk trash about me, and they hear you and they ain't going to say nothing right away. But then they're going to be like, yeah, we're going to address this right now. So, like, no, I'm serious. So I'm talking real talk. I mean, you know, he running for office. I'm running for office too, but I'm going to win being me. I'm not going to win being nobody else.
Right. Absolutely.
Be who you are. Yeah. Don't feel uncomfortable with what you're not comfortable with. That's natural.
Yeah.
But go learn it and expand yourself. Don't be afraid to expand yourself. If you clap off beach, shit. And so what? You know, I sing off key and I still sing out loud. I do. Loud too. Everywhere. Mm-hmm. I sing in the state house. Don't nobody want to hear my singing, but it don't matter. I want to hear it.
No.
Y'all, live your best life. But before I give it back to him, real quick, because he didn't ask me, but I'm excited about my legislation. So giving it to you on the fast train. Cool. So not only did I push for the legislative leave, but I also today had the conversation, well, yesterday actually, about needs-based driver's ed, because my daughter is 16. And, you know, the school, and not only that, but they've been canceling some of the classes because of COVID. Driver's ed is expensive for families who can't afford it. And so Shannon Erickson, shout out to you, Merle Smith, got with me, and they're helping me craft a way to make the DMV and schools come together to offer that to families so that they can get around these issues that are coming up, because everybody doesn't have $500 to throw at driver's ed. So. Yeah. Excited about that. Two criminal justice bills. One that says if you're exonerated, the DMV has to provide you with ID or a license, if they have whatever documentation they have to give you, either one. Because a lot of times when people are locked up, they lose their documents and you can't get your Social Security card or birth certificate without ID, and you can't get ID without them. So it becomes a conundrum. So this helps them get reacclimated. I'm also trying something that, according to research, we haven't seen, which is background checks by SLED being more of a gatekeeping system, where depending on what job you're applying for, whether or not they get to see your criminal history if it applies to the job you're applying for. Now, that's not to say you can't apply for if you stole from a bank. That's not saying you can't apply to be a bank teller, but just know they're going to see that you have that on your record and they can decide. Then, you know, but if you're deciding to be a night stalker with some canned goods, you know, they don't need to see that. And that will, of course, help people who have paid their debt to society rehabilitate a lot easier and be able to provide for themselves and hopefully not go back into the same way of life. Because, you know, it's a false narrative to say that because you've never never done a crime that you will never do a crime. Everybody had to have a first time. And people, you know, a lot of times commit crimes out of necessity or desperation, things like that, proximity. So we want to make sure that we're giving them a fair shake once they've paid their debt to society. That gatekeeping system, I am so excited about it. I filed a bill to establish a minimum wage in the state and gradually step us up to something that we can live with. We don't have a minimum wage currently in this state, so we go by whatever the federal level is. I don't know if people know that. We don't have our own minimum wage. So that is another bill that I am so, so excited about. I've jumped on several others, but I will leave you with that. Of course, the pink tax is not dead. Getting rid of the tax on feminine, women's feminine products is a big deal. And I had a hearing this past week for the tag light bill for your license plate. That little bitty white light above your license plate, you not being able to be pulled over if that is out, because that's really not, it doesn't make your vehicle inoperable. And, you know, with them being reflective, you can see them if there's a light on them. You know, somebody said, what if my car gets stolen? Well, I mean, the DMV has your VIN number. I mean, literally, we know the make and model of your car and your tag number. So all of those things. So I'm pretty excited. I think that'll be a positive thing. All of my bills have bipartisan support, most of them anyway. And so I'm pretty excited to get started on this session and definitely take this fight for the U.S. Senate as well.
Nice. I love it. I love it. I love it. Where can they find out more information about your platform and the things that you're pushing right now?
You can find me on Matthews for Senate on Facebook. You can find me at Matthews for Senate on Instagram. And you can find me at KM for Senate on Twitter. And you can also find my website by going to www.crystalmatthews@matthewsforsenate.com. Good night. I said it wrong. Still, www.matthewsforsenate.com. It's on the screen.
Thank you so much, Crystal. Representative Matthews, it's always a pleasure to speak to you, and just to, you know, hear, you know, the wealth of knowledge that you one have, you know, but what your experience has allowed you to build over your time, you know, in the state Senate, and state house, sorry. My parting thoughts are on really coming back to what we talked about tonight with this legislation that's sitting in the state house. I know that it's really easy to frame these conversations as, you know, race issues, right? And some people get, you know, tired of, why do we always have to talk about race? Race divides us. Race is, you know, they think that by not talking about race, somehow we can eliminate the issue of racism. And I will tell you that a thing that you can't face, you can't fix. You can't fix anything that you don't face. We have to look at the history of this country and what has happened to people in this country, not just Black people. We have to look at what happened to the Western Europeans when they decided to come over in the second great migration from Europe to America, and how they were treated. And then at some point they were made white and they were the acceptable group as well. That's happened in the course. Look at the history of our country. This isn't even something talking about Black people. Look at the history of our country and the way immigrants were treated after the first wave, which was the Western Europeans, the second wave, which was the Eastern Europeans. And then look at how Asians were treated. Look at how Hindu people were treated. Look at how people from Arabia are treated. Which I use Arabia to talk about the Middle East. Let's just look at it. Our country is what they call the great melting pot. It's not actually a melting pot, because in a melting pot, the substances that go into the pot become homogenous, and you have one single item left. Our country is the great salad bowl. People come in from different places and different walks of life, and they maintain who they are. And the thing that we sort of drip on all of us is American. We all become American, and all Americans deserve to feel safe in their country. All Americans deserve to have their history represented in the curriculum of their country. All Americans deserve the right to be protected by the laws of their country equally. And if that's not what we're striving for, we're not striving for the America that's represented in our founding documents or any documents that have come after. If we're truly searching for a country that serves with liberty and justice for all, then we gotta change some things. We gotta acknowledge some things, and we gotta be willing to work together. Does that make us uncomfortable sometimes? You better believe it. But just like in my marriage to my wife, if I can't acknowledge my fault in the things that have gone wrong in our relationship, I can't fix our relationship. We can't just move forward and just say, let's forget everything that I've ever done wrong and move forward from here. No, because she's still hurt. She's still dealing with the injury that I caused. And yes, talking about that injury may make me feel bad about the fact that I injured her. But I injured her. It's in our history. It's in our history. There's gotta be a conversation. The beautiful thing that's happened, you know, since, you know, the tragic murder of George Floyd, is so many conversations have come up. Crystal talked about how people want us to teach them about what it means to be Black. You know, I never had so many conversations. Hey, just let me help, bring me in. Let me know what you're feeling. Before George Floyd, people weren't asking that. You know, we started having conversations about what it means to be racist, what it means to be anti-racist. These are new conversations. And some people look at that and they see that as steps backwards. Well, I'll tell you what's a step backwards. A step backwards is not acknowledging that when my grandfather walked down the street as a little boy, if a white person walked down the same sidewalk as him, he had to get off the sidewalk and walk in the middle of the street. That was a law. The law said that if a Black man and a white woman wanted to marry, that was against the law. That was a law. There was a law that said Ruby Bridges could not go.
They made a movie about that one.
There was a law that said Ruby Bridges couldn't go to a white school. They changed the law to say that Ruby Bridges could go to a white school. And people gathered in front of that school to scream and yell and throw things at a seven-year-old child. And now the people who lined up to scream and yell at a seven-year-old child now don't want you to know that they scream and yelled and threw things at a child. And they think
and that wasn't a riot.
It's fairness. Mm. It's uncomfortable. The last thing. My grandfather was 79 when he died. All right? I think it was 79 when he died. So let's put that in context. My grandfather died in 2012. 30 years before 2012 was 1982, right? 20 years before that was 1962. We're not that far away from it. So don't tell me this was our ancestors that did this. This is our parents and our grandparents. And it may be uncomfortable to acknowledge that grandma and grandpa had some issues. But guess what, y'all? Some of y'all grandparents had some issues. And that's okay. We either educate or we duplicate. When we learn better, we do better. But if you forget about history, you're doomed to repeat it. That's my time for tonight. I thank y'all so much for sticking with me. We went 22 minutes over time. Thank you to Representative Crystal Matthews for her time with me tonight. Please go to her website, www.matthewsforsc.com. Donate to her campaign. Please don't just retweet her. Don't just repost her. Don't just like her. When you feel the need to do that, send her $5 or $10 at the same time. And I will ask the same thing for me. Don't just retweet me. I appreciate retweets. I love them. If you want to retweet me, so into my campaign, help me win this thing. Because when I get to the State House, this same passion, this same fire, this same zeal will be in the State House in Columbia fighting for you every single day. And you'll want that. So vote for me May 17th, special election. May 17th, special election. And then in November, again, in the general election, because I am not going anywhere. If you think you can beat me in one election and I'm just going to go away, you're wrong. You don't know my history. You don't know my past. You don't know what I've been through. And God didn't bring me this far to just bring me this far. So get used to seeing this face. Get used to seeing hearing this voice. Get used to seeing my hats because I love hats. And get used to watching me every Thursday at 8 p.m. when we do our campaign conversations. I would be remiss if I didn't thank my campaign team, JGS Strategies, led by Jenny Atchley. She's doing an amazing job. If you don't know who she is, get used to that name. She is an amazing individual. Go to my website if you haven't donated yet. Even if you have donated and you enjoyed what you heard of tonight, please go donate. No amount is too small. No amount is too large. And I look forward to seeing you all on the campaign trail again. February 26th, I will be at the Blue Bash in Walterboro. Thank y'all so much for your time. I know tonight we were pretty serious for most of the night, but I still love this conversation. I love any opportunity that we have to shine a light on what has to happen for us to move forward as a state, as a country, and as a world. And this is another great campaign conversation. Thank you, thank you, and thank you for watching. God bless y'all, and y'all have a great night. Peace.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Campaign Conversations with Rajon Lewis. Please share this podcast with your friends. Rajon is running in South Carolina House of Representatives in District 97. Please follow on social media at Rajon for SC. Email the campaign RajonLewis4SC@gmail.com. Visit the website RajonForSC.com and make a donation today. We hope you enjoy these episodes as you follow along the campaign trail. Thank you.